there is not a single person on this planet whom God did not make with his own hands.
Am I a clump of cells? Am I a blob of flesh?
If they would just get with the program, things would be better.
Am I actually conscious?
Hi, Adam.
Jason, how are you?
I'm well. Welcome to the Unnamed Podcasting Project.
The Unnamed, is that what it is?
Yeah, we don't have a name yet.
I think we could do, I mean, are we the first episode of this?
You beat Wade onto this podcast.
I did.
How does that make you feel?
Yes. Uncomfortably white gentlemen, maybe. We are very, I know, uncomfortably pasty gentlemen. Maybe that's what we should call ourselves.
The only problem with that is I'm also having Maddie Trost on here eventually.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Yeah. But, we'll get there.
Yeah. I don't know what possessed anyone to think, you know what? Let's put Goodham and Osier on film.
At the same time.
At the same time, yeah. The I don't get it. Anyway.
We'll call it Indigestion, the podcast.
So now that nobody's listening,
yeah,
this is just like being Lutheran. I mean, it's like if being Lutheran had less listeners.
It's being Lutheran without Brett's sanctification.
That's right.
We're going to talk about worldview today.
That's what we're talking about. That's what you told me anyway.
One of our primary classes, or actually suites of classes, is we have Intro to Christian Thought, and sophomore year is followed up by Apologetics, Ethics in Christian Thought. And so let's start. Why do we have a class called Intro to Christian Thought, and why is that one of our core classes for incoming freshmen?
So it's part of one of the suites that we would call are the different sections of types of classes we have, and this would be an educational foundation class. We can give students a great worldview, and we do. We have Bible classes, ton of them. Most of the Bible, if not all of the Bible, is covered. Basically an exegetical or verse-by-verse style teaching. We have some good theology classes as well that take a more topical approach. But the educational foundation classes teach us, or teach the students, I should say, what to do with that information. So if we're teaching them about the Bible, Intro to Worldview, or Intro to Christian Thought specifically, is showing us what is it that we ought to be thinking about and how do we think about the things we're being taught? How does it apply to life? How does it connect with everything that we have around us? What does it mean for today? All of those things are connected into Intro to Christian Thought.
I think one of the key facets of the FLBC curriculum is that Christianity is more than just having the right answers. Mm-hmm. Truth is important. Objective truth, which we'll get into, is important. But it's not just having the right answers to questions about the faith. It's that our faith matters. It must impact mm-hmm. how we interact with the world around us and how we conduct our lives. This is the truth, mm-hmm. and this is what the truth should do for you in your life.
Right, right.
So let's start then, as we've introduced the topic. Give me... other than it's your view of the world, give me a succinct definition for the term worldview.
A succinct? How succinct? Like, are we talking
slightly more than it's just your view of the
more
world?
Than one sentence or
two sentences?
Do you want me to like use the definition we use in class?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, I don't have that memorized. Okay. it's a little bit longer. It's not that succinct. So the way that the authors of our textbook that we're currently using, the way they describe it is it's a fundamental orientation of the heart, and that idea of what are we think about all of these different things, and it impacts a lot of different aspects of life. So it impacts the way that you the decisions that you make are impacted by your worldview. You know, the orientation of your heart, how you see the world around you, how you interpret events coming at you and the different events going on in the world. How do we interpret those things? How do we interpret the big questions everybody has in life, right? This isn't that succinct, but I think it's making sense to you, right?
Well, you've been running on so far, so you're still within a two-sentence limit.
Okay, so pause. Period. no, I don't know. Anyway, so ultimately it's how do we think about the world around us? What is it that we ought to be thinking about the world around us? What are the big questions that I need to answer? That's worldview.
Yeah, I think you used lens before, or another way of looking is your filter. It's not just how you sort the world out, mm-hmm. but it's the device you use to sort the world out.
It's right. The framework.
The framework, the preconceived notions, right. the presuppositions. And so this is where, on the one hand, everyone has a worldview.
Mm-hmm. A key definition, though, a key part of the definition of worldview is that it may be, your worldview may be true, partly true, or entirely false, right? Just because you have a worldview doesn't mean it accurately describes the world around you. Everybody has a worldview, but it's not all the same. It's not all accurate or true. Some might be held unconscious. It might be an unconscious worldview, might be a conscious thought. But at the end of the day, everybody does have a worldview. I just wanted to put that caveat in there because that's a major distinction.
And so a large part, especially of the second part of this series that we're going to be doing, is worldview analysis. My bone to pick with the concept of worldview, and I think this is probably a bone to pick more with how Christians or Christian groups treat worldview, is you said it could be true or false, accurate, inaccurate. The big thing for me is the level of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
When most people begin to think about worldview, conceive of what other people's worldviews might be, we think that people, it's just likely that they'll be coming from a coherent system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's entirely false.
Yeah. In fact, almost certainly going to be false, especially in our state of time right now, like our era of history. We are in the West, which is typically, you know, a very cohesive order of thought, you know, that's typically very, you know, logical, very Aristotelian, if you will.
Or Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah. All of those thoughts. But we're slipping into, well, these things can both be true. It's the nurse that smokes, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's this idea that it's inconsistent with, I believe this is true, I know this in science, but I'm going to make this decision anyway. You know, it's there is a consistent and inconsistent with reality that goes on with worldview as well.
And kind of where I'm heading down that path, this doesn't just apply to unbelievers or people we would be prone to disagree with. So many Christians today, mm-hmm. are maddeningly inconsistent with their worldviews.
Oh, absolutely.
It's too many Christians kind of a la carte.
Yeah.
The different parts of their lives.
And you can think of examples like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can think of the Christian who, and Jason, you and I came from kind of that era where there was a lot of emphasis on behavior. If you're a Christian, you behave in a certain way. And some things of that, you know, some aspects of that were problematic for us in our upbringing, and it can become legalistic. But it is important to recognize that as Christians, we ought to live consistently with what we believe to be true about Jesus, about his salvation, about what that means for us. And it should be something that we do and live consistently. And we don't. It's just, you know, there's so many examples of the fact that that's just not the case. I don't know if you were going that direction of legalism, but that's, you know, versus, you know, Christian living, normal Christian living. But yeah, the Christians in particular are very inconsistent about their beliefs, especially in areas like death, right? That's a good example.
Yeah.
Like, what do we believe to be true about death? Well, you become an angel. No, you don't. Most certainly you don't want to be an angel when you die. And the reason is because Christ didn't come to rescue angels. He didn't come in the form of an angel to rescue angels. That's Hebrews, right? And so we have these thoughts about, well, they just, you know, God needed them more. All of these things are surrounding death, we're really bad about. There's other things too, but as Christians, the way we communicate the faith is very indicative of a worldview that hasn't been well thought through, you know?
And that's where, rounding back, where worldview ends up being very useful. Because so often when we're interacting with other Christians or interacting with the world around us, we're kind of doing the thing where we're treating the symptom instead of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And having a grasp of, you know, the foundations of worldview or being able to do a consistent worldview assessment, what that means is instead of like this weird belief, like people can be dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a thing. Not dogs can be people. People can be dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask yourself the question, how far upstream do I need to go to find out what it was that caused that person to get there? And that's where worldview assessment really helps because it not only builds the major categories of life and existence, mm-hmm. but it provides us with pretty identifiable points where there's forks in the road. Mm-hmm. You went left, I went right. You went up, I went down. Mm-hmm. And that's where the analysis part comes in really handy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can look into that very question. That's a good, you know, that's a good point. How far up the river do you need to go before you realize this is where the problem was? And authors like Carl Truman, for instance, in his book, Strange New World, which is kind of a condensation of his bigger book.
Is that the Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self?
Yeah, Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. A lot of our issues today, a lot of issues Christians face, I used death before, but we could use the sexual ethic. You know, well, it's okay for me to live with my girlfriend. Well, no, that, scripturally, that's really not what you ought to be doing. Well, you know, I think God understands. No, what you're describing is a worldview where you are God. You are setting yourself up. And so you're not really taking God and his word as the source of what you're believing. You're taking your own personal joy, your own personal pleasure, your own personal whatever. You're taking that as your guiding principle. That's what you think matters. That's your moral ethic. That is your purpose in life, is to make you happy. And that's, you know, part of the worldview assessment is, what is our purpose? Well, my purpose is to do whatever feels good, to do whatever is right. And we live in a world where that's an ethic that is held by, sadly, many Christians.
And that's where we get, it's thoroughly biblical to ask those questions. The Bible forbids idolatry. You shall have no other gods before me. But what Christians fail to recognize sometimes in thinking about that is, in forbidding idolatry, most of modern Western society, we're not struggling with images. We're not struggling with Zeus and Jupiter and Odin. But what we fail to recognize is the idol we so often set up in place of God is ourselves.
Right.
And that's a problem.
It is. Yeah. And again, what we're asking, what is the center of the universe? Like, what is the purpose for being here? But also, like, where did we come from? And we act in that whole, you know, was it Copernicus, the one that, you know, kind of postulated the earth goes around the sun and not vice versa? Was it? It was,
yeah.
The Copernican revolution. Yeah. And like the whole world before that's like, nah, it revolves around the earth. We are little earths. We are pre-Copernican little earths. Like, everything revolves around me. And that goes back to the big question of, what's our origin? Where did we come from? Where did all this start? So to know the purpose, we need to know where it came from. All this ties together in worldview analysis.
So that's great segue. Kind of where we're going to wrap things up with this first part. It's starting to build, what does a Christian worldview look like? What are the necessary ingredients? What are the categories? And with the textbook that you and I use, we co-teach this class, separate sections. There are two separate frameworks. Mm-hmm. The first framework, creation, fall, redemption, glorification, which puts Christian worldview precisely into Christian categories.
Right. In a Christian narrative.
In a Christian narrative. Yeah.
It's a narrative because it's more than just propositional truths like statements of God created the earth. You know, we are image bearers of God. But it's the story of creation, like all of Scripture speaks to this story. And the story is creation, fall, redemption, glorification. It's a big overarching meta-narrative or theme.
And then what the textbook does then is it frames it up into appropriate questions that explain those categories on a broad basis that everyone has an answer to. Mm-hmm. So creation goes to, what is our nature? Mm-hmm. And then fall is, what is our world and what is our problem? And then we've got, what is our end? Mm-hmm. And so those four questions form the four worldview questions.
I'm going to back up just a little bit. Like, creation speaks of, like, what is our world?
Yeah.
Like, where does it come from? And I think you maybe switch those around, but what is our problem is what is our nature?
Yeah.
And what is our problem?
Yep.
You know, those are two of those questions. And then glorification, what is our end? But it's more, glorification is more than just, where do we end up in heaven, you know, when we die? Or, what, you know, do we get this mansion or that mansion? It's more of, like, what is our purpose in this life? Having been redeemed, what does that redeemed life look like? And that speaks to what is our end.
Yeah, temporally and eternally.
Right.
So let's start with the Christian narrative, then, the story.
Okay.
Creation, fall, redemption, glorification. Let's walk through that briefly to provide the contours of where we stand.
Okay. So, you want creation, me to tell the story? Well, creation?
You know, in the beginning.
The beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Yeah. Why is creation such an important category? Let's do that.
Why? Well, because it's where we came from. I think you know, you're viewing the creation, fall, redemption, creation, fall, redemption, glorification narrative as kind of the launching point. Mm-hmm. I would turn it around, actually.
Okay.
You
the
know,
destination.
And I would look at it as, yeah, it's the destination. And so I would say everybody asks, and I know I'm calling an audible here on you, and I know I'm kind of switching the narrative, but in the four worldview questions that everybody asks, right? And this is a question we don't necessarily ask consciously. It's subconscious, but everybody has kind of this underlying notion that this question should be asked. And one of the questions is, what is, and the book starts with our nature. Like, who am I? Am I a clump of cells? Am I a blob of flesh?
Cosmic accident.
Am I a cosmic accident? Am I actually conscious? Is this reality, right? People have to ask themselves, you know, who am I? Then the book starts there because it's through that framework that we view the rest of the world. Yep. Like, what is our world? You know, is this a place? Is this, you know, we're on a little floating orb that goes through the universe and through space around the sun and all these things, right? And we have a knowledge of this, but what is it? Where did it come from? It's incredibly puzzling that we have not found life anywhere else. You know, with all of our searching, with all the vastness of the universe, that we haven't found evidence of life anywhere else. I don't think it ruins, by the way, the biblical worldview if they did, you know, or something. You know, it's not necessarily the case, but I'm just, for the sake of argument in this case.
C.S. Lewis helps with that a lot.
Yeah.
The space trilogy.
Yeah, space trilogy, exactly. Paralander was fiction.
Yeah.
I thought it was nonfiction. Oh, crazy. Yeah, no. But this whole idea of, you know, of what is the world is a question everybody asks. Like, this place, how do we exist together? How do societies work? How does moral ethic and code work? Okay. What is our problem is the next question, because I think everybody, regardless of your worldview, regardless of where you come from, religiously or socioeconomically or racially, whatever it is, everybody recognizes there's a problem. There's something wrong here. Things aren't the way they ought to be. And then finally, you know, what is our end? And that question, of course, is asked of the dying person. Where am I going when I die? Is there life after this? I think of, you know, just certain pop culture references. You know, we see people who have been facing untimely death. So I think of Zach Sabayak, for instance, who wrote the song Clouds. He's from Burnsville, but it was kind of a national hit for a while. There's a movie, I think, about it, or he had cancer. And he kind of references, I hope there's something after this. And he is echoing what everybody's thinking. Everybody wants to know, where do I go from here, right? But end, by the way, so the problem, well, you know, the questions, what is our nature? Like, who are we as people? What is our world? Mm-hmm. Number two. Number three, what's our problem? And number four, what's our end? Doesn't just include where we're going when we die. It includes purpose. It includes what we are called to be as part of that, which is, you know, the whole question of meaning. Everybody's looking for meaning. Everybody's trying to create some form of meaning, or they're recognizing meaning in their life. There's some aspect of that every single person's asking. And then, Jason, that's when we get to that next part, okay? That's when we get to the Christian narrative of creation, fall, redemption, glorification. Because the Christian story tells a better story, a true story, that answers those questions more cohesively than any other worldview that I've studied. And I have studied other worldviews. I am a Christian today because I think that, and I believe that, and as I've studied it, that the Christian worldview presents a more cohesive view of what actually is than anything else. And I think the scriptures, as it does answer those four questions, it absolutely gives us confidence that what we are looking at, this is a cohesive worldview thing. This is cohesive. It makes sense logically. It's consistent with my experience. It works. You know, there's benefit to it. It's beneficial. All of those things kind of go in then to that final component of those four questions everybody's asking. Well, how do we know what the answer is? Well, that's when we get to the nature of truth. And that's kind of, that kind of rounds out our curriculum in that course. You know, the big questions, how does Christianity answer that? And how can we determine whether or not those things are true? That's worldview analysis right there.
And so now I get to take that lazy Susan and rotate it back my direction. Okay. Since you called the audible on me. Okay. I got two turntables and a microphone too. I am a systematician. And so I think...
You're a what?
I'm a systematician. I teach systematic theology. Okay. And so I have categories. I think in categories. And where the narrative is your destination, the way I teach worldview is the narrative is my starting point, because the questions don't make sense unless you make sense of where Christianity orders all of this. And so for me, creation is a starting point because we learn so much about God, ourselves, and the world around us if we understand that God created it. It's one of those things that there is not a single person on this planet whom God did not make with his own hands. That the world, we expect the world to be ordered and to operate in a certain way because creation. And even in the doctrines of theology, creation makes sense because in Genesis 1-2, God definitively demonstrates for us that he creates something out of nothing. That gets us, skip a category for a second, it gets us to redemption because God definitively creates our faith out of nothing. If we have creation sorted out, we have to conclude, scripturally so, that we don't have anything to contribute to our salvation. And we start to order those things with the Christian narrative, and then the questions we ask of other people make more sense because we know where we're coming from. And so what is my nature? I am a created child of God. I have a fallen, sinful heart. And then what is the world around us? It also has been created and designed to by God to operate in a certain way, but it doesn't because of sin, because of Genesis 3. That's where you get into the what is our problem. And kind of going back to what we were talking about, where you're moving upstream to find out the place where, you know, the fork in the road and one person went left, one person went right.
Right.
One of the big areas where that happens is that people subconsciously believe that everyone is good by nature. Well, that explains way down here how you got there.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to scripture says we're not good by nature, we're evil by nature, thanks to Adam and Eve in Genesis 3.
Which is why if you were to ask that question, what's our problem? To the average non-Christian on the street, the biggest thing will, the biggest, most likely answer, I'll say it that way, is something out there.
Something else.
Something else out there. Systems, entities, governments, whatever, political systems, socioeconomic, you know, injustices, and all of those things tend to be the answer, and all boils down to something outside of me. They don't want to say something within.
You don't want to say, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
Because then the solution doesn't make sense. Because more often than not, for Christians and non-Christians, the solution is if they would just get with the program, things would be better.
Right. I think it's best answered by G.K. Chesterton, right? That famous quote, or famous story of him, where I think it was maybe the London Times or something had written this kind of op-ed kind of right into us, and let's get the conversation going. And the question was, what's wrong with the world? And Chesterton wrote back, he says, dear sirs, I am.
Yep.
Love, G.K. Chesterton. Not love, but you know what I mean? Yeah, sincerely,
G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah, regards. Yeah. G.K. Chesterton. He recognized what the biblical worldview is, and he's coming directly from that. I don't think maybe the editors of the London Times were expecting somebody to come with that, you know, answer, but most likely not. You know, like, it's very simple. I'm the problem and you are the problem. And together we, because of our sinful nature, really know how to muck things up, make it a mess.
I think as Hall of Fame pitcher Bob Gibson, and I'll be paraphrasing this quote, said, you know, when I find the world full of hate and prejudice, I find that I too am full of hate and prejudice. And it's one of those things. And so, you know, the narrative can be both the starting point and the destination. And then those worldview questions, which we're going to take up in the next episode and kind of explain how they work, that's what fills it. From my perspective is, you know, and we talk about this on our other podcast, being Lutheran, if you don't know what you stand for, then all that's left is that you're standing against things. Mm-hmm. And if all you do is stand against things, you lose your bearings immediately, mm-hmm. and you end up any which way. And that's where worldview translates into chaos. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, the narrative here, the narrative there, and then figuring out where everyone else is in between. Mm-hmm.